Welcome to I'm Ready for My Close-Up. I'm Virginie Selavi, editor of Electric Sheep, the magazine for transgressive cinema, which can be found at www.electricsheepmagazine.com. Today my guest is Andrew Simpson, head of programming at the East End Film Festival, which runs from the 3rd to the 8th of July. The festival opens with a screening of the Arena documentary Amy Winehouse, The Day She Came to Dingle, and closes with the Sundance-nominated The Last Elvis, the story of an Elvis impersonator in Buenos Aires. So Andrew, the East End Film Festival has always had a strong interest in music. Last year you opened with a film on the Libertines. This year is Amy Winehouse. Why did you choose this particular film to open the festival?
Well, I suppose that I should say that the festival has sort of grown out of a spirit of a celebration of the creative dynamism of East London that we feel is sort of very much evident in the area where we exhibit films. A key thing with that is very much a situation where art forms are overlapping. So we've always sort of wanted to explore how cinema and music and art and other art forms kind of can come together. And with the sort of the local popularity of music, it's actually been a very, very fruitful sort of avenue for us to explore music documentary and music film, films that explore sort of musical elements. So it's always seemed very successful for us, and it seemed like a very natural choice. It's one that we think really encapsulates the spirit of creative abandon of the festival, and we think it'll be a really beautiful event because mm-hmm. we're screening it in a church in Limehouse with there'll be a choir and singers and an orchestra and things like that, and it'll sort of, we like to create a kind of a dynamic and interesting environment for people to view cinema in a way that they perhaps otherwise wouldn't.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and music is also an important aspect of the closing film, The mm-hmm. Last Elvis, an Argentine film directed by Armando Bo about a delusional Elvis impersonator. What made that one the perfect closing film?
It seems to follow a similar line to a lot of films that we've screened in the past, and like the film that we opened with, it seemed to be a very good fit. It's a film about obsession, about delusion, about pushing oneself to the edge, which are cinematic threads that we very much enjoy exploring in the programme. But also sort of just had this, it has a great flamboyance to it, which really sort of befits a closing night ceremony. And more than anything else, it's a phenomenal film. I mean, it played at Sundance earlier this year, where it was a big hit, and we were just all blown away by it when we saw it. And it features a phenomenal lead performance by John McInerney, who's actually a real life Elvis impersonator in his first sort of fiction role. And the film's just a knockout, and it's got great songs, and it just seemed very, very fitting to close the festival in that way. I think it'll go down very mm-hmm. well.
Okay, sounds like a good party.
Oh, it's, yeah, we'll be hosting our very own Graceland, so it should be a lot of fun, I think. Mm-hmm.
And you have more film and music events in the programme, including a screening of Murnau's 1922 Nosferatu with a live soundtrack by Minima and the 60-piece Queldrick Choral Ensemble directed by Paul Iris in Spitfield Market. This sounds like an amazing event.
It will be, yeah. Again, we're a festival that's very committed to screening films in unusual spaces and mixing film and live music wherever we can. And we think it's a really fantastic experience. And we've always done these large-scale outdoor events in Spitalfields Market for free, and you know, people bring their families and picnic blankets and whatever else. And we've done The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari and The Lodger and lots of sort of classic silent films. And Nosferatu is one that's sort of been done in that context quite a few times, but I don't think has very rarely been performed on this scale with a 60-piece choir in a sort of a closed roof market that's got so much history and actually fits very nicely with Nosferatu's historical resonance. We'll be sort of experimenting with projections around the screening as well, so it's going to be just a really atmospheric, beautiful, the sound is incredible in that space as well, so I think people who think they've seen Nosferatu won't really have seen it quite like this before, so mm-hmm. it'll be something rather special.
I've seen Minima perform that soundtrack to Nosferatu, and it is really quite something.
It's entirely new this time, so
it's a new soundtrack.
Indeed, they've sort of developed it. They've developed it from their original score, but in collaboration with this choir.
And, oh, fantastic!
Yeah, so it's going to be something else, I think, definitely not to be missed.
Okay, and when is that?
That's on the Saturday night of the festival, so Saturday the 7th of July.
Excellent.
At sundown, 9 p.m. Not to be missed, I think.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Okay, and of course it's the year of the Olympics, and in reference to the Olympics you've chosen five thematic strands: resistance and revolution, art and anarchy, identity and displacement, out and proud, fun and games. What was the thinking behind those strands?
Well, it's a combination of things really. Some seemed to be in our minds many months ago when we started planning the programme. Obviously it's an Olympic year, and because we exhibit in the Olympic zone and just before the games actually kick off, it seemed very natural that there would be a lot of exciting work that would actually be exploring Olympic ideals or the effects of Olympics on East London. That's very much been the case, and that's how the sort of the fun and games strand came together, which is very much a focus on that Olympic activity. And other things have just happened. Obviously, the last 18 months has been an incredibly turbulent period, for sort of global movements, and especially with things like Occupy and the London riots and the Arab Spring. And there's just been an absolute groundswell of really amazing work which looks at protest cultures around the world. These are just themes that kept on cropping up. And in relation to the resistance and revolution strand, which came about very naturally, another thing that has kept coming up is the role of culture in forming social change, and that eventually spawned out of the revolutionary strand into its own art and anarchy strand, which looks at the role of art and activism. So there's a big sort of overlap between those things, but they're a sort of very distinct group of films. And also with the Olympics coming to London, there's very much a sense of the world visiting this city. So there is a lot of people who are in a place which they perhaps are not from originally, and especially in a globalised world as well. So all of these things are kind of mixing together. So it seemed like a great year to be looking at cinema that explores themes of borders, identity, belonging, inherited identity versus chosen identity. So there's just a fantastic lineup of films along those lines. Tony Gatliff's Indignados is a real highlight of that, about a woman from sub-Saharan Africa who travels to Mediterranean Europe and becomes involved in the Occupy movement, which completely challenges her perceptions of where she belongs, and that's a really sort of flamboyant look at ideals of identity. The identity strand also, again, all of these sort of cross over in certain areas into the sort of the out and proud, which is sort of the last thematic strand. We were actually very lucky in that we discovered very early on that we were coinciding with World Pride, which is being hosted in London this year. We've always had a big commitment to LGBT cinema. We've worked with Amnesty International UK a lot before. And so we decided that now was a year to really sort of push the boat out and sort of have a distinct strand within the programme that actually looked at, you know, gay rights and queer experience and things. And that sort of runs the gauntlet from some of the resistance and revolution stuff. We've got Call Me Kuchu, which is the story of the murdered Ugandan activist David Kato, which has won numerous awards, and it's a really heartbreaking film about a man's struggle against an oppressive society. And we've got that, and we've got How to Survive a Plague, which is an American sort of activist document which looks at the gay rights movement's mobilisation against the government to force through healthcare for during the AIDS scare in the early 80s. And that runs all the way through to films from a gay boxing drama from Chile called My Last Round, a Lithuanian lesbian drama called Anarchy Girls, which again fits in with the riot and revolution side of the programme, which was a huge controversy in Eastern Europe, but is just punky and just great fun, and a whole sort of host of other films as well. So I mean, there's a lot of sort of crossover between the strands, so it's a mixture of things that we had in our heads, and just, you know, you're always led by the great films that come out, and there just seem to be a lot. These threads just seem to be running through a lot of the film, so we thought we should just bring them out, really.
It's the first time we've done something like this, right?
Yeah.
Generally
we've separated the programme out very sort of basically into sort of British, European and world. And we still sort of have that basic structure to the programme, but yeah, it's the first time that we've used kind of these thematic threads. But I think it allows people to sort of pick up their particular interest areas and really sort of run through the whole programme and pick out things that, you know, will appeal to them. And there's there's just really sort of a fantastic range of stuff out there for them. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Okay. One of the films in the Resistance and Revolution strand is Riot from Wrong, which mm-hmm. Looks at last August's social unrest in London and the UK. And you have a number of films on issues such as anti-nuclear protests in mm-hmm. Japan and hacktivists. Is it important for the festival to engage with social and political issues, and also for issues that affect London and the UK specifically, or mm-hmm. the world as well in general?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question. I think you always have to strike a balance between wanting to show work which reflects the world as it is, and you know, the ripples kind of that are emerging kind of under popular culture. You know, we have sort of a big commitment to that, and also showing work which is actually just really, really good cinema and, you know, really good fun for the audience. So it's very much a case of striking that balance, but as I say, we are very conscious of showing what the cutting edge of cinema can do. We feel that there are a lot of festivals out there who cover a lot of the fantastic sort of intelligent art house releases that will actually get sort of a platform in the UK, and we feel that there's a niche for perhaps some of the stuff that's a bit sort of rougher, a bit edgier, a bit more out there, a bit more sort of confrontational, and that sort of that dovetails very nicely with films that have this political dimension. And just the basic line really is that with everything that's going on in the world, the really strong, potent work which is being made by passionate filmmakers, which is where great work always comes from, is coming from these sort of groundswells of outrage, activism, people joining together across borders, all these themes that are coming together. This is where sort of the energy seems to be at the moment in sort of the creative world, and you know, our programme very much reflects that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, and what are the insights into the social unrest in London in Right from Wrong?
Well, Right from Wrong is a really interesting example, actually, because we're presenting the world premiere of it, which is great, and it's actually made by a production company, which is a not-for-profit organisation which works with young people to give them an outlet and a voice on their issues and how they experience life and the things that affect them, and essentially sort of it gives a new very youth focused perspective on a movement which has perhaps been commented on mainly by the establishment and the police and the mainstream media. So I think it actually provides a very, very different perspective on how people who sometimes were actually involved in the unrest themselves or were affected by it, it offers a very different perspective on the reasons for those actions taking place, and you know, and it provides a really sort of unique perspective, I suppose. So I think that's it. Provides it's a very important contribution to the debate.
Okay, excellent. An exciting part of the festival for Electric Sheep is your special focus on Shinya Tsukamoto. You have a double bill of his cyberpunk classics, Tetsuo Iron Man and Tetsuo Body Hammer, and also the premiere of his new film, Kotoko. Kotoko sounds very different from his Tetsuo films.
Yeah, it's in many ways much more straightforward in terms of its structural elements. I mean, obviously Tetsuo is this very sort of body morphing, unhinged, very experimental series of works. Kotoko is in many ways much more straight sort of psychological horror. It's about a single mother who how it's described in the synopsis is that she sees double, which might not necessarily make sense in terms of how it's presented in the film. Essentially what she sees is she's a single mother raising her young child in Japan, and she sees people that interact with her and they're being very friendly, but then she sees a mirror image of a darker alternate side of that personality, which are essentially out to get her. And there's this this schism between what is, whether it's her madness or whether there is actually something really going on and there are actually dark forces out to capture her. I mean, it's I think a no less effective and terrifying and strange piece of work, but yeah, it's very different, and some people may view it as being a lot more straightforward when they come to it, but by the end they'll be very, very surprised. And it stars a famous Japanese singer called Coco, who's beautiful and a very kind of magnetic presence. And she just gives a phenomenally unhinged performance. It's really wild. Yeah, it's great.
Excellent. Looking forward to this one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why did you choose to focus on Tsukumoto this year?
I think it's a combination of passion and luck, really. Both myself and the festival director, Alison Poltok, are huge fans of his work, and Tetsuo in particular. We saw Kotoko at a festival in Europe late last year, and just thought that it was absolutely phenomenal, and we're huge fans of his work anyway, so we sought the film out. And so we invited the film, and then we were just lucky enough. The film has a distributor in the UK, Third Window, and we were very lucky that Adam from Third Window was actually just working on the restorations of the Tetsuo films, and so we were just in dialogue, and it came about as an opportunity. So it was very lucky that it came together very quickly, but we're thrilled to be able to do it. I mean, the restorations of the films, I mean, they've always had a fantastically original aesthetic, the Tetsuo movies, but they're going to look incredible when they're finished. So, and yeah, we're thrilled to be able to present them to London audiences for the first time. We'll be showing them at Hackney Picture House, so yeah, that'll be great.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
And you also have a strong focus on British filmmakers. What new British talents can we look forward to discovering?
Well, films that I would point out as being really strong in the British strand. There's a lot of great stuff. We've got 16 films in the British strand this year. We've got a new film by the British artist and filmmaker Andrew Cotting, who's not an emerging filmmaker, but he hasn't made a feature in quite a long time now, which is a sort of a Dadaist experimental documentary involving himself and the historian Ian Sinclair peddling a swan-shaped pedalo from Hastings to Hackney. It's billed as sort of a surreal kind of exploration of Englishness for 2012, and it's really strange and beautiful and a really interesting piece of work. We've got a couple of great documentaries in the British strand this year. One is called Make Your Own Damn Art, which is directed by John Rogers, who I believe is actually a Resonance presenter as well. But it's his film about the artist Bob and Roberta Smith, who is in fact one man called Patrick Brill, who is Turner Prize nominated, very well known in the UK, but has a unique commitment to art as a vital part of democracy. And he works out of a garden shed in Leytonstone, which is where he produces his work, and he's just a fantastic character. And this follows 3 years in his life and work. And he's actually got a fantastic band called the Kenardy Playboys as well, and he'll be doing a special gig around the screening, so I think that'll be a really fun event. We've also got Jaywick Escapes, which is a documentary by Nina Pope and Karen Guthrie, which is a look at a town which used to be a favourite holiday destination of East Londoners in the 1950s, but has now become one of the poorest places in the UK. And it's a really interesting look at sort of the deprivation, but also still sort of the dreams that kind of linger around this potentially dying town on the southeast coast. It's a really beautiful piece of work, and it obviously has a particular resonance for East London as well, given its connection to its history. So that's really strong. We also have the world premiere of a film called The Hot Potato, which is a directorial debut by a director called Tim Lewington, which stars Ray Winston. It's very loosely based on a true story of a 1960s East End wide boy who comes across a lump of enriched uranium entirely by accident, and then travels across Europe in an attempt to flog it off to some various shady characters. And that's sort of a really kind of Ealing style knockabout comedy, I suppose. And it's great fun. It's great fun. So those are the particular highlights, really.
Okay, yeah. Sounds great. And among the new films you'll be presenting, I'm particularly intrigued by The Legend of Caspar Hauser, which is described in your programme as a tale of faith, suspicion and flying saucers set to thudding techno beats and starring Vincent Gallo.
Yes, indeed. I don't know if I could sum it up better than that. It's a really extraordinary film. It's Italian by a director called David Manuli, and it's a black and white postmodern Western which reimagines the famous 19th century story of a man who appeared as if from nowhere and claimed to have had no contact with the outside world for his entire life. And it recasts it as an androgynous, peroxide blonde-haired woman being washed up on a Mediterranean island in a place that doesn't really seem to exist in any real time or place, proceeding to be taught to DJ by the sheriff, who is played by Vincent Gallo, but also seems to make an enemy of the queen of the island, whose right-hand man is a man called the Pusher, also played by Vincent Gallo, who is a biker assassin. And that's about as much sense as it makes, to be honest. It's full of strange face-offs and dance sequences and beautiful footage. It's unlike anything you are ever likely to see again. I think it's a film which will delight some and simply puzzle others, but it exists in a universe that's all of its own. And sometimes, as a programmer, it's you don't very often come across films which you feel you've never seen anything quite like it before. You know, I've probably watched 400 films in preparation for the festival, and it's just an absolute one-off.
Okay, excellent.
Great music too.
Who does the music?
A French DJ called Vitalik, who's a very big name. So it's got a fantastic soundtrack, and that really sort of helps to carry off the sheer madness of the whole thing.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's really something.
Right, what about Somewhere in Palilula, a Romanian film that has been compared to Gabriel Garcia Marquez and the Hourglass Sanatorium in your programme write-up?
Yeah, again, actually, I think it's probably one of three films, I think, in the programme, along with Kaspar Hauser, which is quite unlike anything I've ever seen. It's a Romanian film directed by a very famous theatre director called Silviu Percuretu, who's most well known in the UK. He did a massive production of Faust up in Edinburgh a couple of years ago, which got a lot of press. But he's sort of the master of giant, very flamboyant, very surreal stage productions. And he's taken that into his first feature film, which is the closest thing to it really is the Hourglass Sanatorium. It is this huge stage set, surreal parable of modern Romanian history in which a doctor travels to, I'm assuming what must be the equivalent, the Romanian equivalent of the Bermuda Triangle or something. He goes out into the middle of nowhere as a doctor to work in a hospital in a town called Palilula, and he finds that nobody gets ill. People seemingly come back from the dead. Everybody lives in a state of orgy and murder and frenzy. And it's basically about the series of bizarre experiences over the course of his life, and it's all set to his own narration from his old age about the things which have happened to him. And it's all, you know, I think you can read into it as being a metaphor for Romanian history under authoritarian rule, or you can just take it for a wildly surreal, strange good time. And the thing about it which is so rare now is that absolutely everything is built, everything is constructed, everything is made, so it's all filmed on what is essentially a giant theatre set, and it just, I can't imagine how much money it must have cost to make, but it's just, you've never seen anything that looks quite like it. It's just absolutely extraordinary. So we're thrilled to be able to screen that, and it's only screened once or twice in Europe before, and we're sort of presenting it to the UK for the first time, and it's an extraordinary piece of work, really amazing.
Okay, yeah. Real discovery.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what about Cut?
Cut, yes. Cut is another incredibly interesting one, and again sort of treads that line of a very sort of punky, out there, brave cinema, which is the sort of stuff that we really like to champion, things that lie maybe slightly between the cult and the art house, you know, that space that we think that our programme really explores. And it's a Japanese film directed by an Iranian director in exile. So it's got this really interesting take on Japanese culture to it, and it's about an obsessive cinephile who roams the streets with a megaphone screaming at random passers-by about the the rise of commercial cinema and the death of true art house cinema. And he finds himself in debt to the Yakuza, and the only way that he can get himself out of the hole that he's got himself into is by turning himself into a human punching bag for the mob and putting himself at the centre of a betting ring in order to earn the money back. And he steals himself for the punches that he's going to take by thinking of all of the commercial cinema that he hates, and that's how he manages to physically push himself through what's an arduous experience. It's again very, very strange, but really beautiful, really rough, very funny. A lot of people have taken it as being a very po-faced, very pretentious comment on cinephilia, but I think it's actually broadly very comic as well. And again, it's just one of those films which is just, it feels entirely unique when you see it, and it has a real poignance to it. I think it's a real highlight, and I think people will really take to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And you've also got Carré Blanc, which our readers may have read about in our coverage of the Toronto Film Festival, which sounds really, really exciting as well.
Yeah, indeed. And that's a great late night movie, which is how we're presenting it. But it's also really one of the festival highlights. It's a film by Jean Leonetti, French debut, incredibly assured, set in a near future French dystopia of 60s tower blocks, so very kind of very urban, very gritty, and it's essentially set in a society where people are made to play a series of seemingly completely arbitrary games in order to move up the social ladder. There's a strange sort of caste system in operation, which is only explained in the vaguest terms. People who fail, it is suggested, are turned into human hamburgers, and those who do not move slowly up the ladder. And it centres on one man who becomes very, very good at playing the game because his mother was determined for him to survive, and then he finds himself having to choose between his marriage and the system of which he is a part. And it's just a really dark, really stylish, I don't know exactly how you would describe it. I guess it's a thriller, it's a horror film, it's a dark psychological drama, but it's just incredibly incredibly unique, really, really fantastic, scary and kind of elating in equal measure, and yes,
okay,
fantastic, a really great film.
Okay, and it's just enough time to mention the day of free cinema events that you have previous to the festival itself. Cine East, do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, well, one of our commitments with the link up between cinema and other art forms is we're about sort of a celebration of film and a celebration of art in East London. So what we decided to do, and this is built on something we did last year, was to have a day of completely free film across 100 East End venues. So we're taking over cafes, bars, pubs, cinemas, galleries, restaurants, all sorts of places, and we'll be having 12 hours of free film playing everywhere, and we're bringing in a variety of other festivals, directors that we love, films that we want to champion which maybe haven't been seen in some time, and just bringing everything to the table and just really kind of creating a huge celebration. It will sort of kick off in the Vibe Courtyard with a special screening of Wild Bill. We've got Dexter Fletcher and the cast coming down, and there'll be sort of a gig after that, and there'll also be the launch of the Video Art Lounge, which will include the world premiere of some films about Nick Cave, as well as some experimental film from Lux, which will run throughout the week of the festival as well. So it's going to be a huge day, so come down, grab a map and get exploring.
Excellent.
Right.
Well, that's all we have time for, thanks to my guest Andrew Simpson. The East End Film Festival runs from the 3rd to the 8th of July across various East London venues. For more information, please go to www.eastendfilmfestival.com, and you will be able to read coverage of the festival on the Electric Sheep website at www.electricsheepmagazine.com.